Peace, friends. My name is Erin. I'm a volunteer on the teaching team. I get to continue the story of Elijah today, which we started last week. And we're also using the theme of Lego to talk about how God is building us into the people that he made us to be, to do the things that he made us to do. Anybody here big Lego people? My hand is not up. Thank you, Jason, way in the back. So remember, though, like, you know Lego people, right? Who, like, get the big box with, like, the cool picture on the front? Yeah? And then, for me, I would open up the box, and I would feel like the world's biggest scam had just landed in my lap. Because instead of, like, the toy, give you this, right? These pieces. I don't want these pieces. I want the toy, right? You realize what Lego is doing to us, right? They're making us do all the hard work. My brothers, on the other hand, would create like these really elaborate cities, and then it got put in like the Lego shrine where like you don't play with them at all, which just seems pointless. But here we are, Lego, $1 million, let's go. So we're gonna use, or we're gonna review what we learned last week in Elijah, and that is that God had asked Elijah to go to this foreign land and convince this evil king Ahab and his wife Jezebel to turn back to the people, or turn back to the God of Israel, to turn back to Yahweh and put down like Baal or whoever their nature god was, and realize that they were worshiping the true God. And to do this, God gave Elijah a set of very confusing instructions. So, Elijah, everyday man on the street, I need you to go do this big job, turn all of the minds of the people back to God, right? And Elijah's like, cool, I'll do that. Which is what we all would say, right? No, I'd be like, I have a small group that night, I'm very busy. No. But Elijah was learning that when we follow God's directions, God builds us up. When we follow the directions, then God builds us up. It's the same with us as we follow God. When we listen to God, God builds us up to become the people he created us to be. So Elijah's job, what he was created to do, is be this messenger for God. And to do that, he needed to get some preparation. He was called, but God was equipping him. So first, God says, go over here. Oh, I need you to hide, actually. Before we're ready to do this thing, I need you to go over here. Don't worry, food and water's covered. You got a brook out to drink out of. A raven's gonna come feed you. And this was before bird flu, so that he was okay with this. And he said, okay, I'm into that. And that was last week. Well, the raven stopped bringing food and the brook dried up. And so Elijah now gets a new direction from God. We're going to watch this somewhat heretical Lego film about what happens next.
Ask her for some water.
Excuse me, I've been traveling many days. Can you bring me some water?
There isn't much in the well, but I can go try.
Oh, and ask her for some bread.
And could you also...
And some curly fries.
This is not a drive-thru. Find your own fries. And could you bring me a piece of bread as well?
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't have any bread. I only have a little bit of oil and some flour. Mm-hmm. We collected these sticks to go make a meal from them and die.
Yeah, that sounds great. You'll definitely, definitely want to go do that. But first, can you bring me some bread, please?
What about the message, Mommy?
Oh, right. I didn't recognize you with your beard on. You're tricky like that. I will do as your God commands. You had me fooled there for a second. You
okay, jumpster. I'm fine.
Excuse me, your son.
So, sticks, huh?
Yep.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, sure, you betcha. Anything you need.
Hey, I said I'd feed you. Hashtag live grateful.
Oh, thank you so much. It's really great.
Yeah, sure, you betcha.
God says that your oil and flour will not run out as long as this drought lasts.
Yeah, that's why we have interns.
And he says I'm supposed to stay with you.
Oh, of course, we're gonna love that. You are welcome to stay as long as you need.
Hey, I hear she's single.
I want to know where she got the Minnesota accent from, right? Oh, yeah. Oh, we're gonna like that. It happens sort of like that. Let's go back to God's original directions for that. This is all God said to Elijah, okay? Then the Lord said to Elijah, go and live in the village of Zarephath, near the city of Sidon. I have instructed a widow there to feed you. Okay. Two sentences, two instructions. We read this and we like blur right over it because it's just a place and there's going to be a woman there to feed you. Got it. And Elijah says yes, and that's our message, right? Only no. If you look into what God is actually asking Elijah, he's asking quite a lot. So let's break this down. First, go and live in the village of Zarephath. Okay. Zarephath has, its name means something equivalent to like the smelting place. You know, smelting where they remove all the impurities in metal so it can be bent and shaped and used in many different ways. And it creates like this pure metal. Okay, it can also mean testing place, really hot place. This is not a vacation destination. He was letting Elijah know it's going to be hard when you get there. This is a place where you will be smelted and changed into something else. Oh, and by the way, it's in Sidon. It's near Sidon. Okay. Sidon was not friendly country for Elijah. Because remember that sinful Jezebel? Yeah, we remember sinful Jezebel. Not a lot of babies named after Jezebel. Nope, that's a clue that she's not a good lady. She actually led the people there away from God. And he's going to go here to this land where all these people believe in a God that doesn't exist, and they're all off track, and they're basically enemies at this point. Okay? So go to the smelting place where it's really hot, where you're going to be tested, and then go into this place where all your enemies are. But don't worry, I've instructed a widow there to feed you. Okay, sidebar. Widows were like the poorest of the poor. Women were property, so whenever their husbands died, there was absolutely no one to take care of them. There's no social safety net, no meals on wheels. This is like you're completely alone. You're poor. You're like the poorest of the poor. So God is really asking here, like, I need you to go to that testing place, that smelting hot place with all your enemies, and then I'm going to need you to find the poorest person in the city, and she's going to feed you. I mean, you heard her in the video saying, like, oh, I'm collecting sticks, I'm going to make my final meal, and then we're going to go die. That's my plan for today. And Elijah's like, oh, yeah, I know, but make me bread anyway before you do that. She's like, were you not listening? Right? This is a crazy set of directions, and all of us would probably look at that and be like, I'm not sure that's what God's calling me to do. Are you sure? And Elijah instead is like, yes. I'm all in. And he goes. It doesn't make much sense to us, and that's often how God's directions work. We can see Elijah's whole story. Like, we know he was called for this certain job, and here's God preparing him, and then he does the job, and everything is happy. And yet, Elijah was this man who was living in that moment, and he had to keep saying yes to all these crazy things. And that's what we do, too. We have to be faithful to the things in front of us because that's how God builds us up to become the people he created us to be. There are bigger things there at work that we don't understand. And notice Elijah's story arc. Like these aren't like easy, 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 here's the job. These are increasingly stranger requests. They require more trust. And yet each time he says yes, God provides, and then he has that experience to look back on and say, but he pulled through for me last time, right? He has more confidence that this time he'll provide again. When we follow God's directions, God builds us up. Jesus said similar things in Luke. He said, if you're faithful in the little things, you'll be faithful in the larger ones too. But if you mess up those little things or you aren't honest in those little things, you can't be honest with greater responsibilities. You can't. And sometimes we hear this when we're talking about money, right? Like, be responsible with your money, and then magically there's magic that happens, right? You get more money. Only that's not what Jesus is saying. He's saying, I've given you these little things to do. And if you're faithful to those, if you're faithful to all the crazy things I've put in your life, you will get greater responsibility for bigger things. And this is where, like, the thing starts, where you're like, okay, I want to save the world, right? Because who wanted to save the world when they were a kid? Like, everybody who likes Superman, Batman, people. And yet we have this grand vision, and yet here we are. We live in a neighborhood, and we got a job, and kids, and we got to mow and stuff. And it doesn't look like we're saving the world, but if we're faithful to those little things, how much more will we be faithful to later? And I'm talking, like, really little things. Really little. Like, if you live in a neighborhood where there's a vacant house, and the grass goes up to your knees, mow it. Just do it. Don't wait for somebody to ask you. Take ownership of that. Mow it. If you know somebody who's sick, or maybe they just had a baby and you know they're struggling, and you say, oh, I'm praying for you, and then you go about your day, like, A, first, pray for them. Like, really do it. That's important. But B, show up. Say, let me hold your baby. I really want to hold that baby back there, by the way. Let me hold your baby while you go take a nap. Wouldn't that sound good? Yes, it would. Mow her grass. That's what she really needs. Dishes, laundry, yeah, all these things. And this doesn't sound like we're saving the world, but it's in these things that we're being built up to become the people God created us to be. If we are faithful, if we are listening to God, if we're following God's instructions, he will build us up. You may think, like, if God's instruction is to pray and then you don't pray, what do you think is going to happen when something hard comes up? Your foundation isn't there. If God says, love your neighbor, but you don't know your neighbor's name, there's no foundation there. But imagine if us, like, as a community here, we were, like, really good at the little stuff. And each of us, we embody these little worlds where we have things and people and places and problems and challenges all around us. And if we were, like, faithful to those little things, imagine collectively what good comes from that. What a greater responsibility we have. Sycamore Creek, that's what we do. And it takes a lot of time. Like, when we moved into this church, would you say 3 years ago? We have since then been building relationships with the people in the four neighborhoods around us. That's important to us, and it takes time. And it takes time for us to say, we want to meet God where he's already working in your neighborhood, because you have to actually be there and ask them and know them. You can't come in and just say, like, here, I'm going to solve all your problems. Because Jesus does that, not us. It takes a lot of time. And it's always something weird, too, that comes up, right? Shortly after we moved into this building, this weird thing came up where Wells Fargo contacted us and said, hey, we want to give you a house. And we quickly, like, Googled, is this a scam? And we checked into it, and it wasn't. They gave us this house in the Lion Street that we were able to renovate with $15,000 that they also gave us. Here we are, breaking into our own home at that time. I'm not, like, we couldn't have taken a picture where someone's not looking like they're breaking and entering. That's okay. Dave must have been busy that day, the photographer. So, but we renovated this house, and in December, I think, we sold that house, not this December, many Decembers ago, we sold this house for $28,000. Now, at the time, our main project going on was the renovation of this space. We got rid of pews, we got rid of the red carpet, we built the Connection Cafe, and we thought, like, this would bring people here, and this could be a place where community is built. And that's absolutely happening, and that's exciting. But we also tithed from that money. And so a portion of it went to one of the volunteers who took the lead on this project. He gave it to a nonprofit of his choice. And then the other part of the tithe we gave to the city and the Baker DeNora neighborhood. We said, do with this what you need to do. And then after a while, like, you don't hear anything, because it's a small thing, and we have big goals, and there are, you know, worthy challenges. And then we hear about this project that's going on. And this bigger project has a bigger goal, and it fits into it, where we're trying to, us in the South Side, I live in the South Side, I can say this, change the reputation of the South Side. And that's a big thing. That's like Elijah going to try to convince people to stop worshiping the God that they thought was the real God, nature God, and instead get them to complete, you know, switch their allegiance over to real God, right? This is a huge thing that takes time. But in that small little step, there came a project that's really awesome. We partnered with an artist who lives in that neighborhood now. And I'm going to invite Eric Shantz to come up, and we're going to talk about that a bit. And before he, like, gets all comfortable and looks very humble to you, you should know that he's, like, a really big deal among community artists. Like, he's been on NPR, PBS, all the places, and... he's famous among many. So we're here with a celebrity today.
Welcome. Thank you.
So we're going to start, Eric, with that picture of you.
All right.
In Saginaw. Saginaw is where you are actually from.
Most of my life, yes.
Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit about Saginaw, when you lived there and what you were seeing and how you got started?
My parents moved to Saginaw in 1986, the year that GM laid off the entire city. So I grew up in a city that was dying. Then we graduated from high school, went off to art school, did that for a while, had a theater. Theater got torn down to make way for a sports arena, and I just had to go back home because I, like, lost everything, went back to Saginaw. And I was basically depressed because the city was completely boarded up. And everywhere you drove was just plywood. And I was like, well, I was like graffiti and never did stuff like that, but I was like, you know what would be nice is to have this, like, art on all these, paint them. And I had a friend of mine who kind of pushed me out the door one day. He's like, I'll buy you some paint if you want to go paint on some plywood. And there's no laws saying that I can't paint on plywood. So the first week out, we painted every single building in downtown Saginaw. It was just went around and painting skyscapes and landscapes so that when you pulled up to an intersection, it looked like you were looking out windows.
And instead these are of substantial. Seeing,
yeah, that's actually, that flag wraps all the way around the building, so it's 25 feet high and 125 feet long. And it's the largest graffitied American flag ever made.
See, he's famous.
We filled. It's kind of sad. I should have done it a different way. But actually, filled 255-gallon trash barrels of empty spray paint cans, which I do recycle, by the way.
Thank you. You painted other buildings too.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was actually an old gas station that was out. It's the last remaining mobile gas station in Saginaw. And the city was trying to tear it down, and the Historical Society was trying to save it. So as kind of a challenge to them, I'm like, well, I'll go paint it and turn it into a landmark that nobody will touch it. And it's been sitting there painted ever since.
And here's your art bus, by the way.
Art bus. And then I'm working back in 2010, my best friend was, I lost my best friend to a victim of gun violence. So that's actually a 28-foot tall portrait of my best friend who was murdered.
Amazing. So over the years as you've been doing this, I think over 10 years you said something like 200.
Oh, yeah, 200 and a little more pieces of public art in one city.
In one city. And all of this was funded by the many dollars that just came flowing in, right?
No. this is a donation. Actually, what I would do is that when I started being paid to make murals and got good at them, I would take all, I'd overbid the materials and take all the leftover materials and donate a piece to the city. So the actual materials were coming out of my profit.
Right.
So
no fame, no fortune. Fame, but
occasionally,
no fortune.
Some people offered a little bit of help here and there, but it wasn't really about the money. It was just about fixing up the city I lived in.
Yeah. I love, too, that you lived there. You were sitting around having beers with these people. These were your people.
Yeah.
So how'd you come to Lansing, then?
I moved to Lansing for an art commission in a building that's called Potter's Mill. That's been being turned into studios and art spaces and like architectural salvage place. So I moved here to do a series of 5 murals inside of it. If you ever want to go see them, you can go down. It's at South Street Dead Ends behind the city's recycling center. And I've got paintings in there. One's 12 feet by 65 feet. I've got one that's 30 by 35 feet. I make big stuff.
You make big stuff. Yes, you do. And what made you stay, though?
I liked the city. Like, it's just, I needed a change of pace, and the people here are really friendly. I like the diversity, and it's diversity without hostility. I come from a town that was very, we always like how integrated Saginaw was and how diverse Saginaw was. We had the diversity, but no, like, mixing.
Yeah.
Mix.
And you came to live in the Baker DeNora neighborhood,
yes.
Which, like, stop me if any of this is wrong, but it has a bad reputation for being a violent place, a place that, you know, families don't move into because it's not safe.
Yeah.
This is a place where all, like, the felons go to hang out, right?
To a certain extent.
Is that
true? It's a place where people that have necessarily gotten in trouble, I mean, everybody deserves a second chance, everybody. And so a lot of them are, like ex-felons, ex-cons, but it actually makes the neighborhood safe because nobody wants to go back to jail, and nobody's going to mess with your apartment because they don't want any of the neighbors catching them messing with you. Like, you don't want to get caught messing with something in our neighborhood. Like, that's just not how it goes. We look out after each other, everybody knows each other, and, like, if something happened, we have a support group there. Everybody is, like, I would say we're all kind of poor, but together, we aren't.
Did you just say we aren't?
We aren't.
Oh, that's awesome. We art. That sounds very King James. Together we art.
Thou art not.
Thou art. So when you're there, though, you're also having beers with these people. You also know them. This isn't you projecting onto a neighborhood what you want it to be.
No.
Right? You're fighting gentrification.
I fight gentrification, but I also fight blight. So it's kind of a balance. Neighborhoods should be rebuilt and redeveloped, but you don't want to lose the culture that's there. You don't want to push the people out and alienate the people that are in the neighborhood. And so when you're making civic art and public art, you really have to get to know your neighbors, because if you don't want to, you say don't want to put up anything that offends anybody, but you're making it for them. It's not for you. It's not for the press. It's not for the money. You're making it for the neighborhood you live in.
And these are people involved. You live there. This is
there.
Art made by the neighborhood, for the neighborhood, to change the reputation.
And the solutions need to come from inside the neighborhoods. And it's and working with organizations and groups over the years, every time it's like when there's cleanups or civic cleanup, when people come in, they're cleaning up the trash, it was always some group from another town. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. Like, we're not going to pick up our own trash. We're not going to pick up our own trash. So we just kind of started. And it's amazing, once it's kind of the broken window effect. I mean, once one window breaks, every window's broken. But if you start replacing windows, people start fixing their windows as well. So it works in both directions.
Right. And you talked about in Saginaw when you were there, you were part of, is it Paint Saginaw?
Paint Saginaw was the kind of the grassroots organization that we formed, but there was no Facebook page, no website, no phone number. It's just what we called ourselves.
Because they're artists and they're cool.
And we weren't receiving funding, so it wasn't like we needed to be official.
What were some of the other groups that started from there?
From that, got involved with some friends, came out of the, like, they started coming up with their own, like, Saginaw groups. So we had Grow Saginaw, and then we had Mow Saginaw, which was a grass mowing club. They would meet, and they would literally push mowers across the city and mow every vacant lot, pick up all the trash. It was just started by people that were just like, we don't need to wait to do this. Like, this is our problem. We live here, and it's going to cost, like, $1 million to mow the grass, or we can just go mow it. All it took was one gas station going, we'll buy the gas for the mowers. We'll give you the gas to do it.
And that's such a small thing, too.
Mm-hmm.
You're not changing the national reputation of Saginaw.
No.
No. But, oh, can I tell my fun Saginaw? Your fat.
Actually,
Saginaw,
I think what happens, though, because they're changing the reputation, is that when I was in school, everybody got their senior pictures taken in front of the burned up houses or in front of the vacant buildings. And so by giving them landmarks that identify a city and identify a neighborhood, when you, that picture of Sean, every Saturday, you can sit out there and watch people come in to get their senior pictures taken in front of it, or they're filming music videos in front of these paintings. So every time that thing is shared, it goes out. It's not a picture of a burned up building. It's not a picture of blight. It's a picture of art that defines a city.
Right, right. So everybody after worship today, ask him about his Simon and Garfunkel experience, where he created this video with that, remember that song, America, All Going to Look for America? And then Paul Simon called him and told him it was cool.
Yeah, it was worth it. That's the one that also got me on NPR, was that feature. And it was more about taking a song that was written and redefining it, and it became a piece about urban abandonment and blight, and just switching the lyrics around and putting it on locations around the building and around the city.
That's
great. It was a good one.
Tell us about our peace flags.
Okay, there's a peace flags. I had an idea. It was just I wanted to make something that not only, because, well, the city approached and we weren't going to do anything permanent. We could do a park and do things, but we needed something that could be removed and not necessarily on a building. So I came up with the kind of an idea in the past that I kind of applied to the thing that I was really excited about doing, which was a series of peace flags for neighborhoods that have bad reputations. So it's basically a flag of peace and surrender and of truce. You know, it's just like we're tired of having a bad reputation. There are peaceful people there. We want to share the fact that we're peaceful, and we also want just a truce. We don't want to fight with you. We don't want you to fight with us. And so there's actually 32 of these that will be going across the rolling hillsides into Nora Park, and they will be installed for, we're thinking about 2 weeks, and then they'll be removed, returned to the congregation, and you guys will be planting them all over the city. So we're going to spread the word together.
Peace
from the south side.
To Lansing.
To Lansing and to the south side. Just enough. And doing enough of them to make it a gesture where that once somebody sees something seven times, as a fact, if they see it seven times, they will ask somebody sitting next to them, what is with the flags? What is with that art? What is with that symbol? So what you try and do is you're trying to burn it into their brains to start the conversation about peace in the south side.
This is another example of like starting with that small thing we did. We tied that small thing. There will be a small installation in this park for just a little while.
A little while.
And then let's see what happens.
Yeah.
There, actually, I met someone who came from the city today.
Yeah.
And she said
Andy,
some of those flags are going to be part of a peace walk that's going on in a few weeks.
Oh, sweet.
So this is a project that's growing already, bigger than us, bigger than our own footprint. So.
And they're easy to make. So if you want to make 10,000 of these, we can do it.
He knows the guy.
So, I know the guy.
Hold on. I got to ask you the question cynics are asking. Like, aren't people going to just destroy it?
I've only had a couple pieces that I've ever done vandalized, and they were not kids. They were people that were either didn't want it in their neighborhood or just didn't like me for some reason and decided to vandalize stuff. I had one painting. As soon as I finished it, an hour later, somebody came and threw a quart of black paint across the entire mural. Boom! Across the entire thing. Within 2 hours, I had 7 artists down there, and within an hour after that, the thing was completely repainted. Just fix it. I mean, if you're afraid it's going to get ruined, you're never going to do it. And if it gets ruined, yeah, it's a bummer. I mean, if one of these, a couple of these gets broken, it might happen, but it doesn't stop me from doing it.
Yeah. You should try to rip this material, by the way. Like, it's some magic material that cannot be ripped. I dare you to try it. So today you're installing this right after second service now.
Yep.
At Denora Park. If you go down Pennsylvania toward the zoo, there's a stoplight at Baker, and you'll turn left. Denora Park is there between Pennsylvania and Cedar.
Mm-hmm.
And you can come help place these in the ground.
Yeah.
With Eric. It'll be really great. Eric, can you join me in thanking God for Eric?
Thank you so much.
Isn't it like the coolest, right? I can't wait to see the conversation that it starts and where it goes from there. So let's pray. Thank you, God, for the ability to reach out into our communities in this way. We give this whole project to you, God, because it's yours, and whatever happens with it happens. And thank you for Eric and his talents. Thank you for the people of Sycamore Creek and our generosity, and for those who will show up today and make this message of peace happen. And God, take it from there and make it into something much bigger than Sycamore Creek. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.